last case on this morning's docket is Ula Industries versus Staples Restaurant.
Thank you.
Unless you want me to.
You can argue mine and yours. That'd be good. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes, please, Your Honor.
Proceed.
May it please the Court, my name is Mick Fleming, and I'm here on with the Ryan Swanson firm. I'm representing Scott and Heather Staples, owners and operators of the restaurant Zoe here in Seattle for the last 18 years. Mr. Staples is here in court with me. This is an appeal of an order denying a motion to compel arbitration in a dispute between a landlord, Ula Distilling, and the tenant, Restaurant Zoe. To understand a little more, these businesses are literally next door to each other. They have a common wall on 13th and Union. The dispute is over a change of use provision in a lease that was negotiated in 2011.
And that lease was negotiated with counsel on both sides or not?
It was. And the landlord, Ula, claims that they never approved any change of use provision from a restaurant, full-service restaurant, to an event space. The tenant, Scott and Heather Staples, they claim that consent was sought and received. It was a change. The change was made as significant cost to them over a period of 3 or 4 months while their neighbor was next door watching it. And then 4 or 5 months after they had spent the money and made the change, the landlord said, you know, I've thought about this. That wasn't a good idea.
That's the underlying dispute. But your question is whether or not you should go to arbitration, isn't it?
That is correct. I'm just giving you some background about the dispute.
Well, time's short.
Pardon?
Time is short.
Good. Okay. So the issues that are involved in what would be arbitrated are consent, unreasonable withholding of consent, promissory estoppel.
This is an unlawful detainer action.
It's styled as an unlawful detainer action. It's really a breach of lease case.
Well, that's the underlying claim, but it's an unlawful detainer action.
It's styled as an unlawful detainer action. There's no question about it.
Why isn't that the end of the inquiry?
Well, because it's not the end of the inquiry. Yeah. If you look at the Bar K case, that's a good example. Bar K case said, you can't avoid a valid arbitration clause by styling your complaint as an unlawful detainer action.
In that case, was there a specific exclusion to arbitration as it is here? There's a specific exclusion. It says if it's unlawful detainer action, it's not subject to arbitration.
That's correct, Your Honor. In the Bar K case, there wasn't that because there wasn't arbitration. It was just it was either a fast-track 30-day unlawful detainer, or it was a dispute of a lease provision, which you would have discovery, and you'd be able to present both sides of the matter. I mean, the whole concept of an unlawful detainer action is that it's a statutorily established, very fast track. You can't present any defenses. The only defense you can really present is I paid the rent. And
well,
here,
in this case, you could present the defense that you didn't breach the lease. I mean, it's unlawful detainer based not on non-payment of rent, but based on breach of lease, which is an appropriate basis for unlawful detainer.
It can be, but
and it's what's alleged to be in this case. That's the basis for the unlawful detainer case. So, in other words, isn't it true that if this is an unlawful detainer action that goes to court, and apparently it's before this appeal was scheduled for trial, and that would be the issue in the trial, would be, was the lease breached, thus justifying a writ of restitution?
Well, that would be the case, except as in what this court has said over and over again is that in an unlawful detainer action, you can't present any of those things. You can't present defenses. You can't present cross-claim.
Any one things. I mean, you can certainly present the reason why you're seeking unlawful detainer. If unlawful detainer is permissible based on a breach of lease, then certainly the person seeking unlawful detainer gets to bring up the breach of lease in the unlawful detainer action. In fact, if they don't, they will not have a basis for unlawful detainer in this case.
Well, if you look at the language of the three or four cases I've cited in my brief, it says Unlawful detainer actions create a statutorily created proceeding providing an expedited method of resolving the right to possession. Bar K, it is well established that additional claims cannot be joined in unlawful detainer action. Hazelrig, to protect the summary nature of unlawful detainer proceedings, other claims and counterclaims are not allowed. The court held in Lees v. Wardall.
So you think then, I mean, I take it you must be arguing that the breach of lease allegation in the, I guess it's ULA's complaint, is something entirely separate from their desire to have to prove unlawful detainer.
Well, it's interesting that in ULA's brief, they said we really should bifurcate this and first make a decision whether they should be kicked out, and then down the line we can have another trial and determine did they ever breach the lease. That doesn't make any sense at all. That's why you have an arbitration provision.
Well, I mean, I guess it does. If you have to prove breach of lease by unconsented change of use in order to prove unlawful detainer and kick you out, then I suppose that there might be, I'm only speculating, some leftover issues to determine, such as damages.
Could be. Consent.
Consent would have to be determined in the unlawful detainer action.
Yeah. Now, one of the other things is you don't have...
Am I right or not? You do or don't agree with that? Consent has to be determined in the unlawful detainer action.
I would think that in order to have a fair hearing, you would have to determine that. Whether you can in an unlawful detainer action is a different issue.
Well, what case says you can't determine consent when it's the very basis of the unlawful detainer allegation?
Well, there's no cases that say that specific language, but all the cases say it's very narrow and you can only deal with...
add counterclaims. You can't go outside the question of right of possession.
That's correct.
Their right of possession is based on an alleged breach. Consent would be a defense to that issue and it has to be resolved for them to prevail.
I think that makes sense to me, and that's why we have the arbitration clause. But the question is how narrow can the court draw an unlawful detainer argument, and can you present all of the information? Can you do the discovery necessary to find that out? And the cases seem to say no.
And which cases seem to say no?
I would say that the Wardall case, the Barquet case, the Christensen case, the Hazelrig case all seem to say very narrow, just to the issue of have you paid the rent and, you know, are there other breaches? I mean, otherwise, why have a very limited, narrow scope if, in fact, you have no ability to do the discovery and present that evidence? One other issue, and I'll use some of my other time, that I think is also very important here, is that the parties agreed that if there was any question about whether a claim is covered under the agreement, that's for the arbitrator as well. That was the agreement of the parties. Here,
if I recall, that's attacked as being an issue being raised for the first time on appeal.
Well, it's a jurisdictional issue, though. And under 2.5A, you can raise a jurisdictional issue on the first time on appeal. I wasn't at the lower.
Jurisdiction?
Yeah, well, it says, any issue about whether a claim is covered by this agreement shall be determined by the arbitrator. If you look at the Meat Cutters case, it says, where any dispute over the interpretation of arbitration agreement is for the arbitrator, the court should not engage in an interpretation of the agreement or whether the dispute was arbitrable. That's for the arbitrator.
This court has been pretty firm about not letting people characterize things as involving subject matter jurisdiction when they don't really, because it's just a way of getting past the prohibition against bringing up things for the first time on appeal.
And I understand.
If it's not jurisdictional, then you don't get to do it.
Okay, but it is jurisdictional here because...
Okay, don't start.
Okay, but you understand, if the parties agree that any issue about whether it's arbitrable or not is to be decided by the arbitrator, why is the court deciding it?
But isn't this resolved based on the fact that it says, comma, except unlawful detainer? Doesn't that exception, which is explicit, end up, perhaps surprisingly to your client, swallowing the arbitration requirement when it leads to a termination of the lease and a claim of unlawful detainer?
Well, I as the drafter of the clause itself, I would argue that it does not, that the court making the decision as to whether the unlawful detainer action is appropriate or a breach of lease action is appropriate should be something that is dealt with by the arbitrator, not by the court. That's why the parties agreed to it.
Without the exception, you had a home run. Question is, what does the exception create? So,
okay.
We'll reserve a minute for
Thank
rebuttal.
You. Thanks.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Jim Fowler. I represent ULA. And I think you've made most of the points that I was going to make. We have a dispute resolution provision that specifically accepts claims for non-payment of rent.
Doesn't that provision actually eliminate any possibility that anything is going to go to arbitration unless ULA agrees to it?
No.
It says a breach of lease shall be determined by arbitration.
Right.
But if a breach of lease can be brought in within an unlawful detainer action, then every breach of lease goes to unlawful is an unlawful detainer, and there is no right to arbitration.
No, and here's why. It says any controversy or claim arising out of or relating to this sublease.
Right.
So there could be all sorts of things besides a breach of lease that give ULA a right of repossession that arise out of the sublease that would be subject to arbitration. Someone could get hurt on the premises. There could be all sorts of things. But we do have...
Well, any breach of the lease, though, would it necessarily lead to unlawful detainer?
It depends. It depends on... It
depends on ULA, I think,
depends
on Chairman's point, because maybe you would want to kick them out or maybe you wouldn't. But
that's
if
exactly
you do,
right.
then in your view at least, it's not going to go to arbitration. It's going to be unlawful detainer.
That's correct, and that's what the parties negotiated and agreed. And I wasn't involved in this, but we know that Staples had very good counsel negotiating this contract. So, but that's the agreement.
Well, suppose it went to arbitration. Okay, suppose that the ruling went against you today or in front of Judge Rogers and
right.
you had to go to arbitration. That's not impractical, is it? I mean, you could go to the arbitrator and you could litigate this issue of whether it was or wasn't consented, and the arbitrator could decide whether or not it was a breach of lease. And if the arbitrator decided that it was a breach of lease, then the award would say so, and you'd just go back to court and say, okay, time for an unlawful detainer action and a writ of restitution.
That's
and you'd get priority.
That's a possibility.
And the fact that that had happened, you might have gotten them out a lot sooner than by doing it this way.
That's a possibility, but that's not what the agreement was. And as a practical matter, if my client goes to arbitration, then he has no rights of appeal. And it's a different animal than the right to go to court, which is what was bargained for and agreed upon here.
Well, part of the problem, just to go the other way, I mean, if there was no exception at all, as Judge Applewick was saying, then Staples would win. But if you had the exception and all it said was except for unlawful detainer, then you would win if you had characterized your action solely as unlawful detainer. But their foot in the door on here is that you styled your action as an unlawful detainer and action for breach of lease.
Well, okay, so that raises, I think, the difference between what they argued to the trial court and one of the new arguments they raised here. At the trial court, they made a motion, and they said, this is a breach of lease case, not an unlawful detainer. The whole thing has to go to arbitration. As Your Honor pointed out, breach of lease is inherent in unlawful detainer. If you have a non-payment of rent case, that's a breach of lease. That breach of lease gives right to our rights under the lawful detainer statute. So that has to be decided. At the trial court level, they didn't go and say, Judge, we understand that the unlawful detainer claim gets decided in court, but we want you to separate something out and kick that off to arbitration. They said, Judge Rogers, stay this whole thing and move it all to arbitration. They never made any claim to distinguish between the two. In our brief with the trial court, we acknowledged that there could be provisions in these pleadings that would go to arbitration. For example, and it's the clerk's papers 176 in our brief, we noted they had a promissory estoppel claim for damages. We said, you know, in the future, that may be something that doesn't get decided in the unlawful detainer action. Judge Rogers' order, he had that handwritten notation on the order. He didn't get to that point because they never raised the issue It was never briefed as to what should be within and without of an unlawful detainer action. But he noted in his order, in the handwritten provision, he says these actions, that is, unlawful, he says, the lease excludes unlawful detainer actions from the arbitration clause. These actions are very specific in nature and allow specific relief for landlords. He's clearly acknowledging, experienced trial court, he knows that the unlawful detainer action is going to be limited. But at court, the argument made to him was the unlawful detainer action goes to arbitration. And the statute, or excuse me, the agreement negotiated by counsel between the parties says unlawful detainer actions don't go to arbitration. And let's face it, our unlawful detainer actions get done pretty quickly, hell or high water. Arbitrations can be delayed, delayed, delayed.
And Judge Rogers made some kind of a comment. He said, okay, there, I don't see any gamesmanship. What did that refer to? Was there some kind of an argument by Staples that ULA was playing a game somehow?
I don't recall any such argument. He was, I think, if I could put myself in his, you know, this wasn't titling an unlawful detainer action, a non-unlawful detainer action, just giving it a title of unlawful detainer.
But
I assume,
like,
that's what he's saying.
Playing games with styling the caption.
Yes, yes. And they say that's a matter of styling the caption, but when you look at the complaint, there's six paragraphs of facts or seven paragraphs of facts, and each one of them are, we've got a breach of the lease, we gave notice, we gave an opportunity to cure, they didn't cure, they got to get out. And the first cause of action is for a writ of restitution under RCW 5912, the Unlawful Detainer Act, Detainer Statute. I mean, it's an unlawful detainer case.
So you think they're going to be able to raise consent in the unlawful detainer action?
Sure. Okay. Of course. Why not? I don't think they're going to win, but they can certainly raise it.
It's a trial, right? It's a regular trial.
It's an unlawful detainer
trial,
yeah.
You could have gotten the writ of restitution if you'd posted a bond.
Yeah.
But you didn't, so it's going to go to a trial.
It's going to go to a short trial in front of the...
And it'll be just like any other trial. Both parties will call witnesses.
Yeah.
As to whether there is a...
Yes.
A breach or not a breach.
That's correct. And then if we win, the remedy is eviction. And, of course, you know, if we lose, the remedy is not eviction. So,
and discovery will accompany that proceeding, you think?
Well, that's up to the trial court to control discovery. And I think the court has discretion to set reasonable amounts of discovery in an unlawful detainer action just like any other action. So,
well, I guess my question is, though, is that it's still – even though it's a trial being conducted under the unlawful detainer statute, which is a special proceeding, so it's not really under the civil rules per se.
Well, I think unlawful detainer actions are generally covered under the civil rules. You have the rules of evidence, you have, you know,
the
various
rules
of discovery. And under Civil Rule 26, the court has discretion to do generally whatever it wants on discovery. But you're going to have a quick trial date, so there's not going to be 400 depositions in a case like this. But this isn't a case that needs 400 depositions. I mean, the idea behind this statute, behind this contract, was to preserve the expedited remedy for landlords. And for them to all of a sudden throw it out in remedy goes right in the face of the agreement. So if there's no more, I have one quick comment. This is a new argument based on this sentence about any issue about claims covered shall be determined by the arbitrator. It was never raised or mentioned in the trial court, and in fact, the position at the trial court was directly contrary to it, because they didn't go to the trial court and say, Judge Rogers, you shouldn't decide this motion. You should kick it off to an arbitrator to decide this motion and see whether it's within the arbitration clause. They said, Judge Rogers, you please determine the scope of the arbitration clause and rule on the scope and say that this is outside of it. So it's not just waiver by silence. It's waiver by inconsistent action. It's
well,
waiver
did,
with a...
Didn't he have to interpret it in order to refer it?
He would have to use,
so,
but
I mean,
they never argued that he shouldn't interpret it. They said, you should interpret it, Your Honor. I mean, if they'd wanted to raise this argument, they should have said, Judge Rogers, we think this should be arbitrated, and it should have been two sentences. Here's what this sentence of the thing says. You've got to refer it to an arbitrator to decide if we're right. So, and I would note, I have all sorts of reasons why they're wrong on the merits on this, but the meat cutters case, for example, RCW 7.04A, 060, 070, all preserve some gatekeeper function of the trial court in determining whether something's arbitrable. They would like to take that entirely away. Thank you.
Thank you.
Briefly, thank you, Your Honor. One thing to keep in mind here, because a traditional unlawful detainer is for non-payment rent, the Staples have paid rent for 7 years, almost $600,000 in rent. They've never missed a payment monthly, including during the 17 months since the notice of default was given. And it's been paid and it's been accepted every month by the landlord. There's a difference between an unlawful detainer action and the arbitration. Here, with accelerated review, they both had about 60 days. The unlawful detainer action, quick action, you get an early trial setting. The arbitration with expedited procedures is a 60 to 90 day date for full resolution. Better than the 17 months that we have here now, but this state has a very strong presumption in favor of arbitration. You have written the cases that say that. The argument that the jurisdictional question was not before the trial court is just, I don't think, supported by the record, and we would ask that you send this back and send it to arbitration. Thank you very much.
That concludes our calendar. The court will be in recess.
Court is in recess.